All right, we are in. And you know what? I was going to say we're going to finish this chapter and then we're going to go do the whole chapter, but we're not going to do that tonight. Tonight, we're going to start in verse 1. We're going to end up in verse 23. We're looking at 2 Kings chapter 6, if you're trying to catch up. 2 Kings chapter 6. If I were to try to describe this, it's the power of God in our lives. If I were to try to put this whole thing in a nutshell and say, what are we going to learn tonight? And I would say this, it is the power of God in our lives. You and I may think that we've got it figured out. We may do things under our own strength. Don't we do that? I'm sure you guys do. I know I do. But it's when we trust God, when we depend on what God can do for us. And I'm not saying like, oh, he gave me a cool Maserati because God has not done that for me yet. I'd like to think he could. Maserati, I'll just go for a pickup truck that runs most of the time. But we don't think about God as being the provider. We think about God as being the sugar daddy when we think, oh, God, help me to get this or that or the other. But the reality is we have to have God carry us through our lives. There's things that you're going to go through, struggles, times, and problems that you will have. And without the power of God, you're just not going to make it. And that's the truth. And we're going to see that tonight. I wanted to show you that in hopefully a better detail than you've seen it before. We're going to see a miracle tonight. As a matter of fact, we're going to see a couple of miracles tonight. And we're going to see how that plays out. But what happens is God is constantly surrounding us, doing things around us and all. Now, you and I have a tendency to say, wait a second, God, okay, let me do my own thing. Just hold up here for just a minute. But what we're going to find out is there is a spiritual battle that goes on around us. Do you serve in the church? You know, there is a spiritual battle that you will have to fight. You know, it happens to anybody who stands up here, anybody who goes back there to teach. If you simply say, hi, welcome to Calvary Chapel in the Greenville, you know, you're going to face something. Something's going to happen. You're going to come under greater ridicule, all this. The reason that that happens is because there is indeed a spiritual battle that goes on behind the scenes, above the clouds. However you want to see it, there is a spiritual battle that's happening. And guess what? Like it or not, you're involved. Aren't you happy yet? I think about, you know, some of the things that we've done here, and there is a greater struggle. Once you, and I don't know what it is, it doesn't make sense to me, but once you cross this line right here, and you stand on this, there's not a line there, is there? It's an imaginary line. But once you do that, and you come over on this side, if you play the music, you hit a certain spiritual battle, do you not? And if you stand behind this wooden box, we'll call it, I'm trying to, you know, it's the pulpit, but you know what I'm saying? If you stand up and you say, let me teach God's word, or let me give the information to you, right? What happens? Under greater scrutiny, under greater ridicule, and under greater spiritual attack. I say that, and I want to think about this now. I'm not a superstitious person. I'm just not. I don't think that we have to, you know, bury rabbit's feet or, you know, whatever that you're supposed to do with superstitious, throw salt over somebody's shoulder. And I don't know. I don't get into it. I don't care. But I will say this. I am the only person in this church who has ever at a full pace made announcements and prayed before church and is still in the church. Pay attention to that. I'm the only one who apparently withstood the time. So if you want to leave this church, come up here and do announcements. You'll be gone soon. It's just a matter of time. I don't know. I'm the only one stupid enough not to leave. That's all I've got. But what happens is, I'm saying that to bring an illustration to your mind. There is a spiritual battle that's going on for the sake of the gospel. And you and I are in it. We have the core group for the most part in here tonight, don't we? And as you try to proclaim the gospel, if you try to hand out a tract at a restaurant or a donut shop or whatever it is that you find yourself, you're at a gas pump. Hey, let me hand you a $1 million bill. Tell you about Jesus Christ. You're going to find yourself under attack. if you're doing work for God, you're going to find yourself under attack. You're going to find that there is a battle raging on. Now, as we look out here, we're in America. More than that, we're in Texas, man. We don't have problems. We don't have battles, man. We're so patriotic. We're double patriotic. We like America, but we love Texas. And we don't see the spiritual things that are going on. But it's there. There is a devil who doesn't want you to proclaim the gospel. There's a demon who doesn't want you to praise God. There are all these things, spiritual attack-wise, that are coming against us. And I would say this, God has the power to push any of that away. Now, as we begin our text tonight, we're actually going to look at something a little bit different. But in the whole scheme of things, what it's going to show us is the power of God. In verse 1, we see, "Now the sons of the prophets said to Elisha, 'See, the place where we dwell under your charge is too small for us. Let us go to the Jordan, and each of us get there a log, and let us make a place for us to dwell there.' And he answered, 'Go.'" So now just in verse 1 and 2, we see kind of a cool situation, the Bible college, if you will, okay, because Elisha's leading, he's teaching these young men, you know, this is how you serve God. Apparently there's kind of a groundswell of people who's coming to do this, and they say, "Hey, you know what, Elisha, man, we're packed tight in this dorm. We can't do it anymore. Just too many people. It's getting crazy. It's getting chaotic. All the bad things that you could think of, list and so on. This is the situation that we're in now. Man, we need to build some space." And they did something that I think is absolutely fascinating. They called up, they found a contractors association and said, "We need you guys to build us a new building. Now we're going to go raise the money." You didn't see that? I didn't read that either, did I? No, see, what I read was they said, "Hey, we're going to go get some wood and we're going to make us a place. We're going to make this amazing." Yeah, I mean, they didn't say all that stuff, but they needed a place to be. And so they're going to go hack down some wood, do all the things that they do, and they're going to build a bigger structure because it's needed for them, because they have to have it. But then something goes wrong. Verse 3 says, "And one of them said, 'Be pleased to go with your servants.' And he answered, 'I will go.' So he went with them, and when they came to Jordan, they cut down trees. But as one was felling a log, his axe head fell into the water, and he cried out, 'Alas, my master, it was borrowed.'" Now, if you don't know anything about Christians or anything about people of church, here's one thing I've got to tell you. They're cheap. I mean, squeak when you walk cheap. So here's these guys that are going to go do some work, and they borrow tools. Now, that's a problem. Have you ever borrowed a tool or something from somebody and you broke it or you lost it? You're like, "Oh, come on, dude. I didn't have the money for it in the first place, and I really don't have the money to replace it. Now what do I do?" So it puts you in a spot. They're cutting down trees, and that's where they fell a tree. And so that chop, 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 chop thing comes down. And in the process, as he's swinging his axe, you know the dude's, he's buff and tough, right? Because as he swings it so hard that the axe head flies off. But what happens to that thing is it fell into the water. They're next to the Jordan River. Let me ask you a question. Has anybody in here ever gone fishing? Oh, yeah, we've all gone fishing, haven't we? What do you put on your string or your fishing line to make sure the bait goes into the water? Put lead on there, right? A weight, some kind of weight, some kind of a metal. Why is that? Did you know that metal doesn't float? Yeah, it's like for some reason that thing is heavier than the water, and down it goes. Now, you can argue buoyancy because they do make ships out of steel, but what happens is there's air inside of that bubble, so to speak. And so while there is steel, the buoyancy comes from the air inside. They have a problem because they have a big old chunk of metal. It went down to the bottom of the river. Now, I know we are spoiled today because I can go down to the home improvement store down on the freeway and I can purchase me a brand new axe head and all. And it won't cost a whole lot. It will cost some. Or I can go down to the cheap hardware store, which they're putting one in. You've seen that. It's coming up in Greenville. So I can go down to the cheap hardware store and buy one for half that price. I can get an axe pretty cheap. That wasn't the case back then. Think about this. If they had an axe set, if they had something, it had to be formed and made of steel. It had to be custom made. A blacksmith would make this thing, make it so that the handle would stick into the one end and it was sharp and pointy on the other. And it does all the things that it's supposed to do. It's a custom made axe head. Why do I know that? Because they were all custom made. They didn't have a factory and a foundry pouring the metal into the form and then sharpening the edge. And they didn't have all that stuff. They simply had blacksmiths who could make an axe. And so now you have a problem. This dude borrowed somebody's tool and he lost it. Well, that's always a depressing thing. They were building this kind of a borrowed deal. They weren't really paying for stuff, and it's not that they were stealing it. They just didn't have the means to do that. And so now he's kind of in a pickle. He's in a spot because his axe head sits at the bottom of the Jordan River. I have never been to the Jordan River, although I am told it's quite like the mighty Mississippi. What's that's the name they call them. They call it the muddy Mississippi, right? You don't see the bottom. You go to Memphis, Tennessee, you cannot see the bottom of that river. You can't see 2 inches into that river. You go down to that little island thing off the bridge, and you can look in the water all day long, but you just see a bunch of water going past, and you don't really see that clear, pristine water. And if you go out to Galveston, have you seen that out there? Have you guys been to Galveston? Is that super clear water? Not even close. You want to see clear water, you got to go out to the Pacific Ocean way out there. I mean, we're talking like Hawaii kind of stuff. There's actually a place further out there somewhere, and I don't know exactly where it is. I saw it one time. I was like, man, I have got to go there because the water is like looking through glass to the bottom of the ocean. That's not the Jordan River. It's not the Jordan River at all. The Jordan River is kind of a dirty river, and that's okay. It's fine to be a dirty river, but in the situation where you have your axe that fell into the water, now you get yourself a problem. But then we have Elisha coming to the scene in verse 6. He says, then the man of God said, where did it fall? And when he showed him the place, he cut off a stick and threw it in there and made the iron float. And he said, take it up. So he reached out his hand and he took it. Now let me tell you something. That's pretty unusual. I dare say that would be a miracle. Isn't that interesting? Steel doesn't float like that. Big old hunk of steel going to the bottom, that's what you make your anchors out of. So this is an abnormal situation. This is a full-on miracle because you have metal now floating. Now, when I looked at that, I thought, that's pretty cool. That's pretty amazing. I don't want to take away from what it actually is. But look at what it really is. So there you have something that was impossible fixed by something that didn't make sense. You have the heaviness, you have the weight, you have the darkness of steel completely buried down, covered up, and there's nothing, no way for you to get it. If you went swimming, you couldn't find it, okay? The thing is down. It's probably gone down, wedged into some dirt, rock, whatever like that. It's gone. You're not getting this thing back. But then you have a piece of wood that was cut down, and it was the thing laid out there, and all the properties of the steel, of the metal, the piece that went into the axe head, just like they disappeared. We looked last week at Naaman, and he had leprosy. What's the cure for leprosy? There's no cure for leprosy. You crazy? Leprosy is a type of sin. And what's the only cure for sin? That's Jesus Christ. Here's this steel axe head that's down at the bottom of the river. You can't be recovered. There's no way by practical real purposes, you could not have, you could have maybe gone down and located it or used one of those magnet fishing. I see the guys are doing that now. You may have been able to do that, assuming it's ferrous metal. I'm sure that it was, but assuming that it's ferrous metal and you had a magnet that big to pick that thing up, maybe. But it wasn't going to work out well, would it? From no effort at all, from the wood that was thrown in the situation, up comes this thing, heavy, and unable to save itself. I think it's kind of a cool picture of the cross, if you will. Because here you are dead in your sins, lying at the bottom of whatever, and there's nothing that you can do. There's no way that you can raise up. No way that you can, you know, become better or get out from under your situation. But you look at the cross in that situation, and what does it do? The cross of Jesus Christ takes away the sin of the world. It takes away the sin of each of us. And so I saw that somebody made that comment. I thought, that's a really cool observation about that. Now, will we start a new church by that? No, we won't. Will we start a new theology set? No, we won't. But I think it's kind of interesting to see a miracle there. Now, again, this is the man of God. He could have simply said, all right, God tells me that the axe head is about there, so if you go down and get it, you'll be fine. He could have done that. And I think they would have appreciated that. Hey, man of God, we're thankful for that. That's pretty cool. He could have said, hey, put your hand over the water and believe, and God will lay that axe head in your hand. And could God have done that? Absolutely. But he didn't do that. And so you have to look at it and say, well, why did it happen that way? Why did God make it to happen that way? And I think it was to show them that God is in control, that he can change physics to the point where a steel axe head will now float on the water. Our God is powerful enough to make what is to us a reality change and go the opposite way. And so there's a dependency that they have on God at this point, which is, to me, the more amazing side. And I do believe, and again, this is, I can't sit there and prove this scientifically, but I think that was kind of the point of what was going on. When we find ourselves in a bad situation, when we find ourselves in a place that we can't get out, can't get up, can't change the ordeal, we have to do what? We have to depend upon God. And so now that we learn how to depend upon God for just an axe head, it gets so much bigger. Moving on to verse 8, we see this. Once the king of Syria was warring against Israel, he took counsel with his servants, saying, at such and such a place shall be my camp. But the man of God sent word to the king of Israel, beware that you do not pass this place, for the Syrians are going down there. And the king of Israel sent to the place about which the man of God told him, thus he used to warn him, so that he saved himself more than once or twice. And the mind of the king of Syria was greatly troubled because of this thing. And he called his servants and said to them, will you not show me who of us is for the king of Israel? And one of his servants said, none, my lord, O king, but Elisha, the prophet who is in Israel, tells the king of Israel the words that you speak in your bedroom. Now let me say this. Before this situation, I don't suspect that the king was a little bit of a conspiracy guy, but I think he's getting there. How is it that before I even make my move, they know what's going to happen? Oh, come on. There's a thing that we forget. Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1, it says, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. God knows, because he created time, what happens before and after. I can't tell you that. I'm temporal. I live in the world. I live in the time. I am stuck right now in February of 2020. And in a week from now, I'll be in March, but I'm progressively moving through time. And same as you guys, God created time, stands outside of time, and he knows what's going to happen. What's more than that, God knows the hearts. God knows the thoughts. You say, I just had a bad thought. You know what? God knows. Not to lay pressure on you guys. Like, oh, man. You sat there and had a thought. Like, oh, God knows that. And he's like, yeah, he does. But what's interesting, God still loves us. But on this part right here, they can't get ahead. Elisha loves God. Elisha loves the nation Israel. Elisha loves the people that he's dealing with, and he wishes to protect them. The king is an idiot. Let's be perfectly honest. The king of Israel is a knucklehead. He's got more problems than he needs to have, and yet God protects him through Elisha. Elisha has the ability to say, let me make this thing to work out. And God shows him the moves that's going to happen by this other guy. Now, the natural assessment would be, they got a listening device. If this happened today, what would be? Like, they totally put a bug in our room. They got microphones, something. We can hear what's going on, right? They didn't have those electronic listening devices back then like we do today. That's something that's somewhat new to us. Within the past, in less than 200 years, which is really just a spot in the time of history, they didn't have that ability. So either he had a snitch, and that's why the king asked about that. Hey, who's the snitch in here? Who's the one, you know, trying to cause problems? Who's the one who's in cool with the king of Israel, and who's making this happen? And they're like, no, you don't get it, king. This guy just knows stuff, man. We don't like him. He's scary because it doesn't matter what. He's 10 steps ahead of you, and he looks like a weakling. He's weird, man. We don't get him. He's just some creepy guy in a robe that, you know, and miracles follow this guy like you can't even understand. Has Elisha got him freaked out? Oh, you know he does. See, people recognize the power inside of Elisha. They recognize that he is of God. He is a man of God. And because of that, they question a lot of things that happened. But I'm telling you right now, the confusion, the absolute confounding, confusing thing that was happening there was, how does he know what I'm saying in my bedroom? How does he even know? Guess what? The king's chambers, they were private. Even the king's wife didn't go in there. That was a private location. Imagine your own little paradise place. It wouldn't be a heart-shaped bed because there are no ladies, right? It would just be like this really cool leather, I don't know, I'm just guessing. But however it was, whatever it was, this is where the king, and the most private thoughts that you can have, and this kind of resembles us for our inside of our head. Have you ever thought something and somebody said something that, you know, like, dude, how did you get in my head? How did you get there? I've heard people before say, well, I came in here to church and, man, you're talking about all the things I've gone through. Didn't go to your house and listen. God simply said, here's what you're teaching this week. He just worked it out for us. That's all. But your inner thoughts, you wouldn't tell that to anybody. At time you'd like to punch that other dude in the eye and call him names or whatever else like that. And like, yeah, well, I'm going to be nice to you today. Because we're afraid of our own brain. If we can't be safe in our own head, where can we be safe? You can't be safe from God because he is everywhere. He is in your brain listening to your thoughts, which is creepy for me because I'm like, I think stuff that'll sometimes like, oh, my brain ain't working today. But what happens is God knows. The man of God knows. Elisha knows what's going on because he sees and he knows because why? God showed him. God has the information and God gives the information as needed to Elisha. And so for him to know the movings of these guys before they even do it is not even complicated or convoluted. It's something that's going to happen. Well, he said, the king being upset by this, he says, go and see where he is that I may send and seize him. And it was told him, behold, he is in Dothan. So he went there, horses and chariots, and a great army, and they came by night and surrounded the city. I think that's a pretty bad deal. But you know what? I bet you Elisha already knows it's going to happen. Isn't that kind of cool? Elisha's different than you and me. Elisha knows it's about to happen, and you know what? He ain't panicked. There's a man who trusts God. Everything in our lives, situations that happen, they cause us to panic. How do I know? Because we're humans, we do that kind of thing, don't we? Do you panic ever? Of course you do. Everybody in here panics at some point in time. Except maybe Ian. He don't panic for nothing. Don't even get excited, man. Everybody panics. At some point in time, everybody panics. Elisha, he obviously knows what's going on, and you'll see that in verses to come. And he doesn't panic because he knows that God is in control. He knows that God has a situation set and there's nothing to be worried about. Well, now that they've come, they surrounded the city. They're ready to crush him and do all the different things to him. And we find this. When the servant of the man of God rose early in the morning and went out, behold, an army with horses and chariots was all around the city. And the servant said, "Alas, my master, what shall we do?" Now, he had a servant last week, and that guy kind of went off the rails, didn't he? Oh, dang it. He has leprosy now. So this is a different guy. But Elisha's servant walks out, and he's like, "Ooh, this is not a good day." You ever seen that? You walked out, and you're like, "Ooh, this is not going to end well." And so this is what he sees. He sees all these people coming and attacking. They're coming to do the thing. And this is what this dude is looking at and seeing. And he's a little bit nervous. But Elisha, the dude who they're after, not even nervous. Probably didn't even have his blood pressure raise up. He's probably sitting there going, "Yeah, I knew they're there. I've been knowing they're coming for a while. I knew that." See, Elisha is the man of God who walks around. And you think, well, you know, how is that possible? Hey, look, he just knows. But Elisha knows something that they don't know. God is with them. And Elisha knows that there is a spiritual battle. We talked about the spiritual battle earlier, didn't we? Elisha knows that that exists. He knows that those things are happening. He knows that, you know, that's, we don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but it's the principalities of darkness and so on. There's things that you and I can't see. If you could open your eyes to the spiritual world and see what's going on even inside of this room, where you go around, if you go to the movie theater, if you go to Walmart, probably especially, and places like that, you will see that there is a spiritual battle going on. And Elisha knows this. His servant doesn't understand this, but he's about to. Elisha says, "Do not be afraid, for those who are with us are more than those that are with them." Then Elisha did what he's supposed to do, what you and I should do. He prayed. And he said, "Oh Lord, please open his eyes that he may see." So the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. There is a full-on spiritual battle that goes on every day. You may fall victim to it from time to time, but there is a full-time, full-on spiritual battle. And you think, well, what does this have to do with spirituality? What does this have to, you know, how is this affected by God? But hey, look, the devil tries to pick away at different things in your life until he gets the hot button that does the job. I can tell you right now, I've had a lot of buttons pushed in my life, and he's still pushing them, and he's still going to push them, and it just moves around. What's interesting is, let me not speak out of turn here, but I believe in a spiritual battle, you're going to face something really bizarre and weird one time, especially when you don't turn and run at that point. I had a time a few years ago when I was deaf in my left ear. I was convinced I was going completely deaf. And it was that way for a year's time. And I never could figure out what, and there was no medical reason why I was going deaf. And all of a sudden, boop, I can hear again. And I haven't had that same kind of hearing problem since. But those times come when we're doing something on behalf of the gospel. You're going to come under attack. There's going to be something. But I'm telling you that it comes once. Now, that means that something else is coming next. Unfortunately, you don't really walk away from the things that are happening unless you let something hold you back. Is there something spiritually that Satan is doing in your life and you're going, "Let me relent, Satan," and then you give up, you give in, and you do things Satan's way, and then you say, "Well, I'm going to go back and I'm going to start trying to serve God again. I'm going to try to do the church thing again. And I'm going to do all this again." And then you find out that same thing that was a problem before is now coming back again. If you walk past those problems, you're going to get past those problems. The only thing is you're going to have a different problem coming soon. I talk to pastors and I'm like, "Man, I had this thing. Oh man, I had that happen to me about 5 years ago and this happened." And they tell you stories. You're like, "Man, how is this even happening? How is this real?" The reason it's real is because we're in a spiritual battle. There's nothing special about pastors. Those of us who are serving God. Most of us in here have that claim to fame. I tried to serve God by doing this, by doing that. you are going to have problems. I have health problems that don't make sense. They just don't make sense. And you can't, you know, you go to the doctor and learn, I don't know what's going on with you, Holmes. Mm-mm. I have, you know, symptoms of this or symptoms of that. That's real medical stuff. If I went to the doctor, they could see kind of what's going on. But if I wait long enough, like I tend to do, that's a disease, not going to the doctor in time, I know. But as I wait, the thing passes by and it's like, well, I don't think there's anything wrong with you. Okay, that's fine. Listen, guys, there is a spiritual battle afoot. And we're part of it. This servant's eyes were now open to what was going on. Elisha says, they ain't got nothing. They've got a bunch of guys down there. They've got some soldiers, sure. They've got the horses and all that nonsense. But we got this. And you know that had to impress them. Chariots of fire, man. We saw that before as that chariot had separated Elijah from Elisha so that Elisha would not follow Elijah. And Elijah was taken to heaven. He didn't even die. And you notice the thing that was there that prevented Elisha from following was a spiritual thing. It was that chariot of fire. He didn't go up. He went up in a whirlwind. He did not go up in a chariot of fire. Elisha is now pointing this out to this guy. He's like, I think we're going to be okay then. You ever seen that movie where there's this little punk and there's a like a big bully guy or whatever? In the part of the movie where the little kid, so he's finally like, I'm going to stand up to him, like this. And he stands up and he's like, I'm going to tell you one thing. And then the bully backs down and you're like, hmm. But then you look behind this little kid and sure enough, I don't know why it does that. But sure enough, this guy starts backing down and there's a group of people behind this punk, man. He's like, we're going to take you out because there is no strength in one unless it's Jesus. There is no strength in only one unless it's God, right? There is strength in numbers, and God will send the numbers for help. He did this for Elisha. Let me say this and say, you know, if you do something that's against God, something of your own will, and God doesn't send the armies, don't be surprised. If you're doing something for God specifically, I'm, you know, doing this thing, I'm teaching, I'm proclaiming, I'm sharing the gospel, I'm whatever the thing, I'm discipling people and really doing all this stuff for the Lord, and I'm really not paying attention to myself, I'm, you know, I'm the back shelf compared to all these things, and know that God's going to be there fighting your fight. When you say, well, I'm just going to hear, you know, I love Jesus there. I saw a guy the other day on television. He says, I'm not a religious man. I am a Christian. I believe in God and all that stuff, but I don't go to church. Well, how do you do that, dude? How's that working out for you in your walk? Listen, if you're serving God properly, he's there for the battle. Not to lay pressure, but if you're not serving God, and you say, well, how come all this stuff, bad stuff's happening to me? It's going to happen to you one way or the other, but has God got your back? When you come through a bad situation with the Lord, you get to the other side of the situation and you see where God did the things in the life. But you don't see that when you're not walking with God. So Elisha prays that his eyes would be open, and so they were. And verse 18 says, when the Syrians came down against him, Elisha prayed and said, please strike this people with blindness. Man, this guy can't make up his mind, can he? So he struck them with the blindness in accordance with the prayer of Elisha. Imagine this too. Elijah calls fire down from heaven. Elisha calls for somebody to become blind. And God says, okay. Let me tell you something about Elisha. He's walking in the will of God. Say, well, I prayed for this. I prayed for that. I prayed for, you know, I've heard one person before in here say, I'm claiming this in the name of Jesus. And I'm like, dude, it doesn't work like that. I'm claiming $1 million. You can claim it all you want to, but if you lay hands on it, you stole it. And I see that all the time. You're like, I claim this. No, listen. If you're serving God, God will support you. God will make it happen. Elisha prays for these guys to go blind. What an odd thing. What an odd thing to do. But what you're going to see is something really amazing. God knows the heart of Elisha, and what he prays for is not a bad thing. Now, you may look at it. Do you think it would be bad to go blind? I think it'd be kind of tough. It'd be kind of weird. And I don't know how blind they are, if they can kind of see, but not all the way, or they just, the perceptions change. I don't know what's going on there. But Elisha calls for blindness, and God says, yeah, we'll do that. Verse 19 says, and Elijah said to them, this is not the way, and this is not the city. Follow me, and I will bring you to the man whom you seek. And he led them to Samaria. Now, this is pretty interesting. This is the boldness of God. This is the faithfulness of Elisha. Let's put the picture back in your head again. There was this big hillside, and there was a bunch of chariots and horsemen, the whole thing. And they were coming down to get Elisha. And Elisha's servant walks out, and he goes, ooh, boy, this is going to be a tough day, dude. Things are going to be good. Elisha says, don't worry, check it out. We got our whole army with us. We're good. We're totally good. Causes the enemy to go blind. And now we have the boldness of Elisha as he goes up to the army and says, hey, guys, I know what you're looking for. He ain't here. Follow me. I'll take you the right way. He's the guy. He's the one they came for. He's the one they're supposed to kill. He's the one they're supposed to take out. And he has the boldness to go up to him and say, in the power of God, of course, hey, let me take you to the right place. You're in the wrong place, dude. Huh? And they listened. That's even better. It's the boldness of serving God. It's the boldness of being God on God's team, so to speak. Elisha said, hey, you guys are going the wrong way. Let me show you the right way. That's pretty dang cool. Elisha is a bold dude. If I would have done that, they would have killed me. Like, we saw your face already. We know who you are. But Elisha called for them to be blind. Notice this. In Elisha's boldness, he asked God for the help. God, can you help? God, let me tell you something else too. This ain't Elisha's plan. This is God's plan. Elisha's walking so close to God that God's mindset falls onto Elisha, that God's thoughts fall onto Elisha. I mean, he is that close. He's that guy. I wish I could be as close to God as Elisha was. He's that close, that awesome, that everything's going just, I mean, and it, look, Elisha doesn't do it for personal gain. That's the weirdest part. He's not going to gain anything out of this. He doesn't have the notoriety. Hey, we're looking for Elisha. That's totally me. You know, imagine Hollywood, right? We're looking for this guy. Well, that's totally me, dude. I am super awesome. Then you find out, wait a second, these guys don't like me? Yeah, we don't like you. Elisha knows that these guys are coming to kill him. He has the boldness to say, guys, let me take you where you want to go. That's pretty cool. That's a man of God that has my deep respect. And so he leads them away. And he led them, it says, to Samaria. And as soon as they entered Samaria, Elisha said, O Lord, open the eyes of these men that they may see. So the Lord opened their eyes, and they saw, and behold, they were in the midst of Samaria. As soon as the king of Israel saw them, he said to Elijah, my father, shall I strike them down? Shall I strike them down? And he answered, you shall not strike them down. Oh, man. Elisha has led the enemy directly to the camp of the king. Does he hate the king? Does he want the king to get killed? Strangely enough, no. Here's a man who loves people around him, and he doesn't seek to do that. But the king's like, oh, and he knows, he respects to a certain level the man of God. And he asks him, you know, shall I strike him down? But Elisha answered him, he won't strike him down. Then he asks him an interesting question. Would you strike down those whom you have taken captive with your sword and with your bow? These people are captives of God. He bound them with blindness. And then he led his captives to somewhere. This is cool. See, God made these people captive, but he didn't put chains on them. He didn't put any kind of shackles on them. He didn't put some kind of a heavy burden on them. He just says, hey guys, follow me. I think that's pretty dang cool. And so he takes them there. You and I would maybe say, well, they see who he is and they're just going to take him down. I mean, so the king is kind of at a weird disadvantage. But Elisha instructs him to do something really bizarre. So should I strike him down? And he asks him the question, you already got these guys captive. Why would you hurt them? And he says, set bread and water before them that they may eat and drink and go to their master. This is interesting. The compassion of God. Let me tell you about the compassion of God. Have you done something wrong to God? Yes. Has he struck you down with great vengeance? No. Because God's a God of compassion. The God that we trust for all the power, the God that we trust for all the leadership, the God that we trust in all things implicitly throughout life, is the God who has compassion on the people who are held captive. If this is how God runs a prison, I want to be part of it. You know what I'm saying? Now, obviously, there's a difference between prison and hell, so I'm not making that distinction. But if just being a servant, or as Paul would call himself, a slave by choice of God, if it pays out that well, man, I want to be part of that. I want to be committed to God. I want to be set in that mindset. But Elisha tells him, make them some food, and then you're going to send them back home. That's not how you conquer people. Elisha, have you never read a war book? Have you never read, this is not how war goes, dude. This is not what you do with your enemy. You kill your enemy. So you know what the king did? He went through the group and he started killing them one by one, right? Okay, well, never mind then. Verse 23 says, so he prepared for them a great feast. And when they had eaten and drunk, he sent them away, and they went to their master, and the Syrians did not come again on raids into the land of Israel. That was a supernatural event. You and I would have killed them. We would have zeroed it out. We had the same attitude as the king of Israel. And we do. We're like, oh, we're going to take him down. But God says, no, not only are we going to send them back, we're going to send them back in love. They're going to go on a full belly. And they're not going to come back and do anything again. I think that's pretty stinking cool. I like the fact that these people were coming against God's, not just God's country, but God's guy. Elisha is God's man. He is the man of God functioning and being there in all those ways and all the capacities. And even as they come after him, what? God has compassion on them and sends them home with a full belly. That's pretty dang cool. Years ago, I was talking with this biker guy, and he had this dog, and it was vicious. I didn't know it was vicious. I was feeding the dog pepperonis. As it turns out, if you're training a dog for what this guy was using, personal protection, this dog was vicious. It wasn't no play toy. But the dog was my friend because I gave it pepperoni. And that guy found out what I was doing, lost his mind. You can't do that. Like, why not? I'm trying to make cool with this dog. This dog's pretty rough looking. And he goes, I've been training that dog and you're ruining everything. He gets mad at it, right? He gets mad at me. You know why? Because when you feed somebody, they keep coming back to you for the food. They love you. They see that. And that was the thing that was going on with these guys. God brought them back. God fed them and then he sent them on their way. You think about this too. We've been going through the book of Matthew. We had the feeding of the 5,000 where God fed them and sent them away. Here pretty soon, we're going to have the feeding of the 4,000. That's coming up very soon. And what's Jesus going to do after the fact? He's going to send them away. He's going to send them away on a full belly. They have so much, they've got leftovers. I mean, that's that big time. So God hasn't changed from the Old Testament to the New. There's not a different God of the Old Testament who was brutal and mean and all those things. God's always been compassionate. And the thing is people would step on God and God would clear the situation. God would punish those who do bad and those ones who really come against him. he would end up making them gone. You think about Sodom and Gomorrah. You think about places like that where they're no more. They're just no more. God cleansed the area. But God gives us chance after chance after chance after chance after chance. And I could say that until morning time, and it still wouldn't be the same. Wouldn't be enough. God is the God of another chance and another chance, and he has compassion on you, and he has compassion on me. Isn't that cool? I need compassion sometimes, too, because I'm an idiot. I own that. But we serve a God who loves you, and he loves me. And even if we are the enemy of God, he will feed us, make our bellies happy, and send us on back. I like it. I like it a lot. I like the fact that I serve a God that's obviously way better than me, way smarter than me, and his compassion, his love never ends. It never fails. We see that in the Bible in many places. And it's so true even right here. Hey, let's pray, guys.